About 6 months ago, I got rid of my car. I'm older, I'm 84, you know, and driving wasn't so much fun for me anymore. In addition, I had so much rust on my car, I couldn't afford to fix it. So I'm without a car, and I'm learning how to get around.
You know, you see people that are on their way to work every morning, or they're going to their friend's house, or they're just on the bus to be social and get out for the day, or they're running errands, you know. I definitely know, like, a few people that I probably don't know their name, but I've seen them on the bus almost every day this year, and it's just, it's really nice to see these people and feel a part of a community.
It's very convenient, so I enjoy the bus that we
have. Depending on who's driving.
Yeah, right? It depends on who's driving.
Did you two meet on the bus?
We met at the bus station.
Yeah. Okay, best friends.
Yep. Well, I asked her for a cigarette, and we were talking about being sober and, you know, walking our sobriety path, and we decided that we would be best friends.
Yep.
And hold each other accountable and, you know, just be each other's people.
People.
She's my person.
You are my person.
Yeah.
From Vermont Public, this is Brave Little State. I'm Sabine Pooks. Riding the bus around Chittenden County, you witness some bus magic. Newly minted best friends. A couple on their way to officially move in together for the first time.
I can't believe I met you guys as you're about to move in together.
I know. What are the odds of that happening again?
Public transit can be a place where people connect with each other, outside the isolated shells of their cars. And at the heart of the public transit system in Chittenden County is a fleet of big blue and green buses. The system, Green Mountain Transit, has 11 different local routes that run around the county, plus commuter and link buses to places like Montpelier and St. Albans. We heard from people who live near the local bus routes that the system can be incredibly convenient for them. For the last 4 years since the start of the pandemic, it was completely free, though that changed just a few days before this episode aired. And choosing public transit over a car is also better for the environment. But the bus system we have is fragile. Fewer people are riding the buses today than a decade ago, and Green Mountain Transit is staring down a big fiscal cliff. Unless it can find $2 million by November, GMT says it will have to make major service cuts next year. That means less service for the people who need it, and it means it will be harder to attract riders who are used to taking their car. Like Nathaniel Eisen, this episode's winning question asker. By the way, bus magic, that's his phrase. Nathaniel lives in Winooski, and he's what transit researchers call a choice rider. He also has a car, so he's much more likely to take transit if it's convenient. And on his way to our interview at the Vermont Public Studio in Colchester, it wasn't.
By the time I had the thought, oh, I wonder if I could take a bus to Vermont Public, by the time I would have gotten there, I would have missed the bus that would have gotten me here on time for our interview. And then the next one wasn't for another 20 minutes. And so I drove here and I caught up to that bus and I was like behind it. And that just happens to me all the time.
That 20-minute window between buses he's talking about, it's called a headway. Most local GMT buses have weekday headways ranging from 20 to 30 minutes, though some are much longer, depending on the day and the route. Nathaniel wants to know, what if buses had shorter headways or dedicated bus lanes? What if we reintroduced a streetcar system in Burlington? He did some research and realized these are all options we've considered before.
That's probably very validating that you're not the only one who's thought this.
It was totally validating.
In the early 1990s, the state of Vermont looked into building a new transit system for Chittenden County, either a better and more efficient bus system or what's called light rail, an above-ground train system. The state found that all of those options would attract more riders than the current bus network over time. And yet, it's 2024 and we don't have low headways. We don't have light rail either.
And so for me, this question is in part a question of why weren't any of these options pursued?
Reading these reports, Nathaniel is haunted by the possibility of what could have been. And that's why he wants to know.
Why doesn't Chittenden County have better public transit options?
Welcome to Brave Little State, Vermont Public's listener-powered journalism show. Each episode starts with a question about Vermont that's been asked and voted on by you, our audience. Today, listener Nathaniel Eisen and I are boarding the bus to understand the state of public transit in Vermont's most populous county.
There's a lot of people that don't have cars, too. So this is like our lifeline.
We look back at some unrealized transit dreams.
Part of me says, you know, what were we thinking?
And hear from the people who are fighting just to keep the system we do have alive.
And it will sort of create a death cycle where we just end up in perpetual cuts.
We're a proud member of the NPR network. Welcome.
I used to have a truck and then I crashed into a telephone pole.
So now the bus is your main way of getting around?
Yeah.
Yeah, until I get a truck again.
How long have you two been together?
December 1st. We've been friends for years.
How did you meet?
Special Olympics through Howard Center.
She did,
I did soccer.
She did soccer. I did softball.
Yeah.
What do you like about competing in the Olympics?
Bragging rights. About winning and losing, saying, ha ha, you lost, ha ha, we win. You don't have the gold medal, we have the gold medal. And when I play games, I have a serious look on my face, like, you don't want to mess with me at that point.
And is that the face that you fell in love with?
Yes.
Chittenden County is more than Burlington and its surrounding towns. But in terms of public transit history and future, that's where the big ideas have been centered and where we'll keep our focus for this episode. And by the way, if you're interested in transit infrastructure and behavior in other parts of Vermont, we have an episode for that. You can go check it out. It's called How Can Vermonters Drive Less from 2019. The first modern public transit system in the Burlington area was a streetcar system. It was extensive, snaking from what's now South Burlington up North Avenue to the west and to Winooski to the east. Then came the automobile and all the excitement that came with the automobile. In 1929, Burlington scrapped its streetcars altogether, famously burning the last one in the street, and switched to buses under a private operator. In the 70s, when the local bus company went out of business, the state created a public entity to oversee that system instead. But by the 1990s, there were still a lot of people using their cars to get around, and officials complained about congestion on the roads. That's despite some pretty inventive efforts to get more people to ride the bus. Like this 1992 rap from students with the mayor's youth office.
Instead of 20 cars making smoking dust, those 20 people are riding the bus. In the chain.
Anyway. In 1992, the state was looking for a more attractive transit option, and it commissioned a study into building a fixed-route light rail system around Burlington. Think above-ground subways crossing the city. Here's a colleague reading from the report.
These systems can not only increase transit patronage, because people are much more willing to ride rail vehicles than buses, but can also direct growth to downtown areas, cluster...
The light rail system could run twice as fast as the existing buses and would start with a line from downtown Burlington to the airport. The price tag?
$50 million.
4 years later, the state came out with another report. It was 700 pages.
The recommended action plan for transit improvements is in four phases, with two sub-elements of phase three.
The first step outlined was to improve bus frequency or headways for the current system, down to 10 minutes. And eventually, Burlington, South Burlington, and Winooski would have an entirely new light rail or bus rapid transit system with its own rights of way for quick navigating through traffic. On paper, this was a time of real hope and excitement for public transit advocates. So the 1996 report comes out.
Right.
And then what? What happened after that? Can you sort of walk me through where you went from there?
You know, frankly, not much happened.
Peter Clavel was mayor of Burlington for a large chunk of the 90s and was on the 1996 Project Steering Committee. We spoke with him back in January for an episode about Burlington's sister cities. Peter doesn't remember one decision that the committee made to ditch the project or one naysayer who dramatically shot the whole thing down at a meeting. Instead,
it just died a slow, quiet death. You know, again, I think the challenges were just too overwhelming to address. Nor do I know that there was ever a consensus on the best approach. Mm.
Did you feel at that time like it was incumbent on your office in any way to push that first phase forward or move forward with some of the recommendations from the report?
Yeah, and again, this was maybe one of the problems was there are a lot of people involved, a lot of organizations and institutions, and when everybody's in charge, nobody's in charge.
Despite the length and great amount of technical detail in the study, it didn't have a specific action plan for moving forward, like whether to pursue light rail or bus rapid transit. It also didn't recommend a specific source of funding. Most funding for public transit comes from the federal government. Peter says the federal representatives who were part of the study process, they didn't seem to think it was possible for Burlington to get the money it needed.
You know, frankly, looking back at it in the 1996 study, part of me says, you know, what were we thinking? Do we really think that at that time that we might be able to generate a $50 million public investment? Was that real or was it just dreaming? We might have been naive, but I think there was a notion that public transportation is so important that we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. But those of us that believed that this was important, I think failed in convincing others, including regular citizens, that this was important.
Burlington didn't entirely abandon its railway dreams. In 2000, the state and federal government reportedly spent almost $20 million on a rail line that extended from Burlington down to Charlotte, 13 miles away. The commuter rail was dubbed the Champlain Flyer, and supporters hoped it would usher in a passenger rail renaissance in Vermont. But critics called it a boondoggle. And not long after he entered office, Governor Jim Douglas pulled the plug on the project, blaming low ridership and other funding priorities like maintaining roads and bridges. Just 2 years after its inaugural ride, the Flyer took its last ever trip in 2003.
I'm not a car person. I'll just tell you that right off. It's not that I can't be, it's that I choose not to be. I like public transportation. I think it's good for the environment. It's sustainable. I think we should all, you know, try to go car free and take the bus more or a train more.
Do you have a lot of the bus routes memorized?
Yeah.
That's kind of a superpower.
In a sense.
What advice do you have for people who are considering going car-free or using their car less, but maybe are daunted by that possibility?
Take a chance. Try it. Get to know the schedules, first of all. I would study the schedules. And give it a try and see what you think. You know, it can be good. You have no hassle of the car, and it gets you out there, seeing the city, experiencing relationships with others. So there's a lot of benefits to it.
Burlington's flirtation with local commuter rail was a bust. We're not getting streetcars back anytime soon either. That leaves us with the bus system we have in place now. And it's struggling.
So over the 2 years, I think it's very realistic that we'll see about almost a one-third reduction in service.
Clayton Clark is general manager of Green Mountain Transit, which runs the buses in Chittenden County. GMT faced funding woes before the pandemic, in part due to low ridership, but thanks to a big boost in COVID stimulus funding from the federal government, it could put off making major reductions in service. Clayton says that's no longer the case.
And that's going to really require GMT to make a lot of really hard and horrible decisions because public transit access is critical for people's lives.
GMT is facing a big gap in operating funds, both in federal dollars and the required local and state match. Over and over, agencies in Vermont have studied different ways to make up that match, including in three different studies over the last decade. But lawmakers haven't taken action on making a longer-term plan. Once again, those big studies aren't worth much without political will and money.
Right now, whenever we find ourselves in a financial hole, there's really just one place to go to, and that's the state legislature. It's clear that that's a pattern that they're tired of.
In the absence of another boost from the state, Clayton says GMT's planning on creating an affiliated nonprofit this summer so it can raise funds for the bus system. And he says it's going to look at making those service cuts as early as July 2025.
It really worries me that by reducing service, we'll actually reduce ridership to the point that we'll have to reduce service more, and it will sort of create a death cycle where we just end up in perpetual cuts.
Another hit to ridership? Since the pandemic, GMT has kept fares free. However, a few days before this episode aired, GMT brought back fares for its urban buses at $2 a ride, with the potential for further fare increases down the line. The state estimates the new fares could reduce ridership by about 15%. There are a lot of riders that GMT might never lose. Almost all of the passengers we spoke with for this story don't have cars and need the bus to get around. They said sometimes the buses run behind schedule, and sometimes they're a little worried about their safety. But for the most part, they find the system convenient and reliable. Like 52-year-old Leo Pesci, who lives at the Motel 6 in Winooski. He usually uses the Special Services Transit Agency, or SSTA, to get to the methadone clinic and errands. SSTA is a door-to-door transit service that GMT contracts out for eligible riders with disabilities. But today, Leo forgot to set up an appointment, so he's taking the bus.
It's just been a long time. Like, this is a large chunk of my day. But it's all right. I'm glad that it exists. I mean, it does its function, you know. It works really well.
But what about so-called choice riders, the ones who could just as easily hop in their cars? How does the system win them over? That's after the break.
Oh, I went out to play disc golf, and now I'm going back home. So it's practical, you know. I can get to activity, you know. And I went early in the morning so I could beat everybody, you know. So I could just do my own thing. I had cancer for 25 months, and I mean, radiation treatment was literally me walking one block, even in the worst days. Get on the bus. Drop me off here, get on the bus, drop me off back at home. So my whole cancer treatment was like, the bus was great. You know, I didn't have to worry about getting up here for nothing. So yeah, so the bus has played a good role in my life.
That stop that we just stopped at, that was a big stop for you for a while.
Yeah, and you know what? For a while, it gave me a lot of anxiety afterwards. I was like, ooh, I hate this bus stop, but to get to Essex, I got to go through there, you know, so, yeah, it's a big bus stop, you're right.
In the process of reporting this story, I realized I very much fall into the category of choice rider. I drive or bike most places, but it turns out the bus is actually super convenient for me. The number 2 drives right by my house and stops just a block away from my office. Not everyone has that luxury. We asked Vermonters on Reddit and Instagram why they don't take the bus. A lot of you said there aren't convenient routes that take you from your homes to your offices or into town. One commenter from Burlington's New North End said their commute's 20 minutes in the car, but an hour on the bus because of all the transfers. And lots of people mentioned headways. If I miss a bus, I'm stuck somewhere for another hour, said one commenter. In other words, policymakers and officials will have to close that gap in convenience, even as the bus system makes major cuts, if they want to see more people choosing to ride. Part of that is bringing more people to the bus. As those Burlington high schoolers said,
"See you at the bus station."
Okay, let's leave that in the 90s. These days, the Burlington Office of City Planning is looking for ways to build more housing along public transit routes. Remember, buses are convenient for people like me when they live on or near those routes. The city is also going neighborhood by neighborhood for yet another study into how it could get people to use transit systems in their areas, beginning with the Old North End. City planners are visiting shift workers to talk to them about getting to and from work after hours, and they're considering building new infrastructure, like a mobility hub, a space where people can access buses and car shares and bikes all in one place. In the meantime, local advocates are taking matters into their own hands. A group called Vermonters for People-Oriented Places recently installed wooden benches at bus stops around town where there were none to make a point about how simple transit infrastructure can really be.
Can you go to the next slide here? Actually, all right, so go back. Just one more thing about the transit app.
All these efforts to get more people out of their cars and onto the bus, already there are groups of people making this transition together. A dozen people are seated at the Brownell Library in Essex Junction on a Saturday morning. Volunteer Joel Collada is fielding questions about riding the bus. It's part of a new GMT-sponsored training for people who want to learn how to ride the bus. And between the new fare cards and the GMT schedule app, there's a lot to take in.
If you haven't ridden a bus before, even if you're in a new city, the intricacies and the differences between systems and modes of travel can be intimidating. And I've even heard that it dissuades some people from riding the bus just because they don't know. And it can be embarrassing to make a mistake in public. So it's important.
Joel is a passionate user of public transit. Like me, he conveniently lives right off the number 2 line. And that's the bus we're riding today, to put what we've learned during the presentation into practice. At the bus stop, I wait next to Dorothy Bergendahl of Essex Junction.
I wanted to learn how I could use the bus to get downtown without taking my car.
Why don't you want to take your car?
Parking. The cost, the how to pay for it, and where to find it.
She's hoping the training will demystify her questions about the bus schedule, but today introduces some new questions.
And so 11:40, there's supposed to be one at 11:40.
Because the bus doesn't come when the app says it's going to.
I hate to say it, but this is not atypical.
At first we think we've read the schedule wrong, but it turns out the bus is just a bit late.
Yeah, this is us.
You just have to be ready for more unexpected occasions when you take transit.
Faith Inglesrud is another volunteer and frequent bus user.
Once you've done it and you understand the system and know how it works for you and have times that work for you, then it's not a big deal. Then it's just as convenient to take the bus. But I think that gap of having to learn all the systems is the hardest thing.
At the end of the day, though, it's about more than just learning to board the bus and pay the fare. Riders also need to learn to be flexible and patient, because we need the system to work better for us. But in the meantime, we might just have to work with the system we've got.
Just because we have glitches like that, you know. But, you know, where else do you get to meet all these different kinds of people?
Thank you for listening to the show. And a big thanks to Nathaniel Eisen for the great question and all the help with research. Also, for joining me on the bus to interview people for this episode.
Bus magic.
A lot of the people we talked to for this story had concerns about the new fares. The long and short of it is this. As of May 20th, 2024, GMT is charging again for bus service in its urban areas. Service in the 4 rural counties that GMT serves will remain free, thanks to help from the Vermont state legislature. Each bus ride is $2, though there are discounted fares for kids, seniors, and people with disabilities. Rides are capped at $4 a day and $50 a month. For the first time, GMT is also allowing people to buy fares through an app and a reloadable smart card, in addition to the traditional cash method. We'll have links with all this information in the online version of the story at bravelittlestate.org. This episode was reported and produced by me, Sabine Pooks, editing an additional production from Burgess Brown and Mark Davis. Angela Evansy is Brave Little State's executive producer. Our senior producer is Josh Crane. Theme music is by Ty Gibbons, other music by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to Charles Dillard, Gregory Rowan Gould, Marshall Distel, Chris Cole, Patrick Garahan, Corey Doxer, Bobby Lussier, Jordan Mitchell, Richard Whitting, Patty White, Erwin Gratz, Caroline Losnick, Winston Lumpkins, Zach Barowitz, and Paul Detzer. Also, a big thanks to the people we spoke with on the bus and at bus stations for the story. Tom Whitney, Emma Kane, Jessica and Anne-Marie, Amanda Farnsworth, Kenny Gavin, Gina Horner, Daryl Fields, and Leo Pesci. Brave Little State is a production of Vermont Public and a proud member of the NPR network. If you like our show, you can make a gift at bravelittlestate.org/donate or leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. We'll be back soon with more people-powered Vermont journalism.